You're listening to The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, your escape to reality.
Hello and welcome to The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. Today is Tuesday, December 30th, 2008, and this is your host, Stephen Novella, president of the New England Skeptical Society. Joining me this evening are Bob Novella.
Hey, everybody.
Rebecca Watson.
Hello, everyone.
Jay Novella.
Hey, guys.
And Evan Bernstein.
Hello. On December 30th, 1924, Edwin Hubble announced...
Did Evan just hit puberty?
Hello.
Edwin Hubble announced... Now.
Hello.
This is very important.
This is Mrs.
Well,
Bernstein.
Hello.
Hello, everyone. 1924, Edwin Hubble announced the existence of another galactic system in addition to the Milky Way.
Who cares?
So the first other galaxy.
It was huge. Suddenly, our universe became a lot bigger.
A lot.
That's right. Bigger. Well, this is our 2008 Year in Review episode.
Yay.
This is always a lot of fun. This is when we just have a chance to look back over the past year for the SGU, for science, for skepticism, talk about the best moments, maybe some of the interesting stories that we missed over the year, and... take stock in how things are going.
And we should warn our listeners that this is very masturbatory. So, if you're not prepared for that.
Simon Cowell would say it's all a bit self-indulgent, don't you think?
I don't think Simon Cowell would talk to us about our podcast.
Your English accent is non-existent.
Yeah, you have to have follow-through. Take it from Jay, who's... accents are second to none.
All right, give it to us, Jay.
It's like a golf swing, you know.
Give it. Yeah, I know.
Don't throw it on me. You did it.
What? I heard a little accent challenge in there, though.
I challenge you to do it.
You threw down the gauntlet.
Accent contest.
Try an Irish brogue next time. That might do. Might be better.
A Scottish.
Ugh.
Well, we have a number of categories that we're going to go over to start out. Just these are mostly off the cuff, very informal. Just a way of talking about some of the standouts for the past year. Let's start with the skeptical hero of the year. This is the person that we think, person or people or institution or whatever, who had the biggest win, the biggest skeptical win over the past year.
Well, one of the people that comes to mind I was thinking of, I loved what P.Z. Myers did to Ben Stein, especially the phone call incident. Mm-hmm. I thought that was one of the coolest skeptical things that happened. I mean, that was more humorous than like a big win or wasn't like anything really moved forward, but he just made them look so stupid, and I love that.
Jay is referring to the expelled pseudo press conference that they invited various bloggers to participate in, but the bloggers couldn't actually speak. I was on the call at the time recording it, luckily, and all of a sudden... PZ suddenly jumps in and we can all hear him, and he starts like calling them on all the BS they've been spinning for the past like 20 minutes. And it was hysterical. Apparently PZ had called in early and they had just been in the room talking and giving out the code to call back in with the ability to speak on the conference call. So he hung up, he called back in with the right code, and then he just quietly sat and waited for the right time to burst in. And it was hysterical.
It was great. But I'm going to call the entire skeptical response to the movie Expelled a win. Eugenie Scott needs to get props for Expelled Exposed.
That's true.
Right away, starting up a website, calling them on every bit of nonsense that they were selling in that movie. P.Z. Myers was awesome. And just in general, Expelled was a huge flop, and I think that the skeptical backlash and sort of watchdog function that we served in response to that movie had a lot to do with it.
Michael Shermer also played a very big role in countermanding the Expelled experience of this year, and he stood up and did some very good work to defend, his role and how he was totally taken out of context,
right,
like so many others, Eugenie as well.
And Richard Dawkins as well wrote a very good review of the movie that really put it into place. And it was from Richard Dawkins that I learned about the term a Lord Privy Seal, which apparently
right.
the movie
oh, yeah.
was full of. These sort of non sequiturs that are illustrating the letter of a term rather than the meaning of a term.
And don't forget Roger Ebert coming in at the last minute, just about last month, with his incredibly funny, extensive review of Expelled.
Nice closer, yeah.
Definitely.
For my money, though, for Skeptic of the Year, which I think is tough, and I put this out on the blog, and I came up with a list of 10. PZ Myers was on there. But also, one I think a lot of people in the U.S. might overlook is Ben Goldacre. He has done a fantastic job all year long of calling out the media on their poor science reporting and their overall gullibility. And you add to that the fact that he was sued, along with his newspaper, The Guardian, by a pseudoscientist who has been selling vitamins in Africa as a cure for AIDS, which I think you guys can agree is pretty heinous. Ben basically went to court with the jackass, Matthias Rath, and he won. And Rath has to pay all of Ben and The Guardian's legal fees and basically just got his butt kicked. And Ben also had a book come out this year, Bad Science, that was a bestseller. So I think he did a great job this year.
Yeah, Ben had rocks. A really good win. Yeah, he's also an awesomely cool guy.
We got to meet him in Las Vegas, and he was really, really great. Great fellow.
Yeah, I had a hamburger with him.
A big one.
Is that a euphemism, Jay?
Oh, God. You got that idea in your head in Vegas, and you just never let it go, Rebecca.
It's a sexy idea. You're both sexy men.
Evan, what do you got?
Well, my skeptical hero of the year was Richard Saunders, and it was primarily, I mean, Richard's great on a lot of different levels. I mean, he's very much so taken the lead role in Australia as far as being the, you know, I guess the number one skeptic in Australia, but he also does have a worldwide presence. And he did an extra special job this year stepping up and giving the skeptical treatment of the show The One, which certainly, you know, got a lot of popularity. And he was up there basically, you know, holding the skeptical banner in the face of so much pseudoscience and psychics and other crap that was going on in that show. And I think in the end, you know, when it was all said and done, he really did about as good a job as I think he could possibly have done on a show like that, you know, with so many things going against him. Just the show itself and the concept of the show having to go in against that, and then all the tricks of television production and how it gets edited and so forth. And, you know, he still came out looking really good in the end on that. So he did a really bang up job and was exemplary. So
absolutely, he definitely deserves mention for being, you know, a skeptic known nationwide on television. You know, that's not many of us managed to do that.
That's true. That's a good point.
And also cute.
That's good for him. I'd like to say that of all the skeptics that I've gotten to know over the past few years, he's definitely one of the friendliest and one of the most energized about teaching children. Totally looking forward to go visiting him in Australia. And so he is mildly sexy, I guess you could say that.
Yeah. Mildly, come on.
Who hasn't gone?
Well, Bob hasn't, but we should bring up Phil Plait because he did become the head of the JREF.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Phil had a banner year. He became president of the JREF, and he had another fantastic book come out, Death mm-hmm. from the Skies.
And he was on our show several times.
And Skeptologist.
And his blog is part of the Discovery.
Right.
That's right.
Family. Yeah, good year for Phil.
And also very good looking.
There's a theme here. Yeah. So you have to be nice and good looking to be a successful media skeptic. Is that it?
Honestly, if I hadn't have said that, Phil would have hit me.
Yeah, you know the term beer goggles? There's a thing called skeptic goggles.
Skeptic goggles.
Well, you guys name all great people. I've got another one that I actually forgot about for a while. Somebody on the boards mentioned it, and it reminded me just what an awesome guy this guy is and what he accomplished this year. Sanal Edamaruku, president of Rationalist International. If you guys remember earlier in 2008, he orchestrated probably the most witnessed paranormal failure in history that I'm aware of. You guys remember that?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
He was invited on India TV with Pandit Surinder Sharma to talk about tantric power versus science.
Oh, my God.
And Pandit just said that I can kill anybody within 3 minutes using black magic. And
yeah,
Sanal, of course,
that was awesome.
Challenged him. And for 3 minutes, Pandit said magic words. You know, remember those funny
killy,
words he
killy,
was saying?
Killy,
and
killy,
killy, killy. He brandished a knife in front of him. And after 3 minutes, nothing happened. So the host said, "Well," the host let him continue, and he continued for 2 hours, and nothing.
And Sunal just laughed at him, like literally laughed in his face. It's beautiful.
He's brandishing a knife in front of his face, and he's just pretty much staying calm and laughing at this guy. So nothing happened after 2 hours. So the guy was thinking quickly. He's like, oh my God, how am I going to get out of this? So he said that he knew a never-failing special black magic that only works at night, and it's for ultimate destruction. And Sunal, of course, challenged him immediately. So for 3 hours, India TV announced that the Great Tantra Challenge was going to happen that night. And boy, did their promotion work, because that night, several hundred million people, I mean, I checked this out as much as I could. Tons of websites confirmed this, or hopefully they weren't pulling from the same source. But they said that they claimed that several hundred million people watched this show. And of course, it was just another epic failure for Pandit. It was just even more ludicrous. Do you know what the most watched show ever in the United States, as far as the sources that I found, claim that the MASH, remember that show,
yeah.
MASH? Their final series ender had 100 million Americans watching that, which is huge. If it has been passed, it hasn't been passed by much, but it still might be the winner. This tripled it. I mean, even American Idol never comes close to 300 million.
What?
It was amazing. So, you know,
but the Super Bowl regularly gets like 150 million.
Right. And this got 300, and with a 1 day's promotion. Now, I don't know how many people actually changed their mind, but when you've got that kind of reach, 300 million people, you know that many, many thousands of people who were kind of on the fence, it pushed them over. It had to. When you're dealing with that many numbers, I thought that was just a singular event that I don't know when it'll be repeated. So I had to give Sunal props for what he accomplished.
That's almost the population of the entire United
States.
Right,
exactly. Yeah. Yep.
Certainly a huge skeptic win for a single event. Absolutely. So you guys all came up with great ones. Those are all on my short list. The one I'm going to mention, however, also a very sexy person, not necessarily a skeptic, but I would just say skeptical hero this year, has to go to Amanda Peet.
Yeah. Totally.
For going Amanda. Up against Jenny McCarthy and the other anti-vaccinationists, and essentially getting the story entirely right. So she said that, yes, she's a celebrity, but she doesn't want people to listen to her opinion or, you know, her analysis. She is simply promoting the scientific consensus that vaccines are safe and effective, they prevent disease, they save lives, and that, you know, you should get your children vaccinated. And that she's been very effective in sort of promoting that, just a, you know, pro-science idea, and in taking a lot of the wind out of the sails of the anti-vaccinationists. And backing her up is Paul Offit, who we interviewed on our show, who wrote the book Autism's False Prophets. And he is a pediatrician, and he has been at great personal expense and risk, you know, has actually been on the front lines fighting the anti-vaccination crowd for a long time. So the two of them basically have paired up and are, you know, hitting this issue head on, and they absolutely, since I think this is one of the biggest issues, if not the biggest issue for skepticism in 2008, they get my vote for this year.
For sure.
Lots of heroes, lots of people to look up to.
Absolutely. Lots of honorable mentions that we're not going to have time to go
right.
over, but I think the skeptical movement in general had a good year.
We did.
Someone brought up the Skeptologists, which, of course, you know, it hasn't been picked up yet. But I give mention to Brian Dunning and Ryan Johnson for putting a tremendous amount of time and effort. And still, I mean, Ryan completely re-edited the pilot to make it more sellable to to the industry, and they've been working like dogs,
really?
Trying to promote the show. They really are. It's all behind the scenes. No one, you're not hearing anything about it because that's just the way of it. You know, it's all very, you know, hush hush, these kind of things. But all I could say is that they've been working extremely hard to bring a hardcore skeptical show to television. They get props for that effort. You know, it remains to be seen, of course, what will come of that. Hopefully it will be successful, but succeed or not, their efforts should be recognized.
I think overall, my perception of this year against the other 2 years that we've done the show, and we've been acutely aware of the skeptical community, you know, for how many years? Like 10, 15 years?
Yeah.
I just had a feeling that a lot of good people came into the movement, or I at least became aware of them this year, and I feel like, you know, our numbers are definitely growing, and I love it when we get emails from people saying they're starting skeptical societies locally. I just got there was a lot of movement this year that I didn't feel happened last year, so it was definitely was a good year for skepticism.
Absolutely.
So the other side of that skeptical hero coin, what is that other side of the coin?
So yeah, the other side of the coin is the douchebag of the year, which I think is going to be our official title for this.
And we apologize to douchebags out there for
yes, you know, it actually is an insult to douchebags everywhere.
That's right.
But you know, in honor of South Park's knighting of John Edward as the douchebag of the universe, right?
Biggest
the
biggest douchebag.
I think it's the biggest douchebag.
Biggest douchebag of the universe. Yeah. So that term of, you know, has a special meaning for skeptics everywhere.
And he had stiff competition too.
Yeah. So some of this is the flip side. I mean, I'll start just because I was talking about Amanda Peet and Paul Offit, and of course the flip side of that is Jenny McCarthy.
Jenny.
This was definitely, in my opinion, her year. In terms of being the douchebag of the year, she, you know, took the lead of the anti-vaccination movement. She was all over the place. Just last night, I'm falling asleep, and on the radio, Jenny McCarthy comes on some local, you know, losers radio show, and who was, you know, gave her a totally gullible interview, and she's just repeating the same nonsense over and over again about the non-existent toxins in vaccines, you know, greening our vaccines too many, too soon. She was very slick with the slogans. You know, her and her boyfriend Jim Carrey have been, you know, very, very tireless in promoting their anti-vaccination, you know, wackiness. And unfortunately, it's had an effect. There have been a number now of outbreaks of measles in various parts of the United States, unprecedented in recent years, and all among populations that are unvaccinated. Or, you know, the outbreaks start among individuals who are unvaccinated in communities where there's a particularly low rate of vaccination. A lot of people have promoted a lot of nonsense this year, but there is a body count, you know, with Jenny McCarthy and her nonsense. And it's so, you know, she epitomizes what we call the arrogance of ignorance. You know, her arrogance is only matched by her profound stupidity. She really has no business giving out medical advice to the public and thinking that she should have her hand on the tiller of public health. She really has no business doing it.
But Steve, what about her mommy instinct?
Yeah, her mommy instinct.
Oh. Stop.
That's the arrogance part. To think that her mommy instinct trumps science, reason, many, many scientists. I said it's also the casual assumption of moral superiority that everyone who disagrees with her doesn't care or is evil or is compromised. It's really, really arrogant and, you know,
dangerous.
She has my vote hands down this year.
Well, I can sense hunger.
Is that the J instinct?
You know, Rebecca said something when we early on when we first brought her up, and she said, you know, this is a woman that became famous from picking her nose on TV.
Mm-hmm.
Then she appeared in Playboy. And, you know, I mean, I don't think everyone that appears in Playboy has to be stupid or whatever. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of intelligent women that do that. But it's not like she has a track record of being educated and, you know, being an intellectual. She basically has, you know, she's suffering from a son that has a problem. I can understand her despair. I can understand her struggling to help her son find a cure, you know, to help him in any way. But she took it to such a degree that you have to strip away the fact that there's a problem in her family and just say she's doing wrong.
Yeah. You missed the biggest thing, though, Jay, is she, before she was into the Green R vaccines thing, she was into the Indigo Child thing. She was going to tell the world that, you know, her son was an indigo child. Actually, I think she's an indigo mom and her son was a crystal or some new age crap like that.
And that's the amazing thing is that it started out like this was some blessed event to befall her. And then she completely switched gears and it turned into, you know, a disease that she would cure through her, you know, magical super mommy powers. And the Indigo Child website, everything just disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
Just snap of a finger, gone. Which is,
can we give some background on?
They think their indigo children are like some divine fulfillment of humanity. They're going to, you know, bring us to the next level of consciousness. It's all just new age.
Yeah, and there are these like Aryan super children with blonde hair and bright blue eyes, and you know they show all the signs of autism. You know, where they're maybe they don't interact socially well, and it's one of those things where you can really kind of understand in a way a parent who has a child and they're worried because the doctors are telling them maybe something's wrong, or maybe they're just noticing that there's clearly something different about their kid, and instead of realizing that it's something that's going to take a lot of work to deal with, they'd rather just sort of fall into this easy fantasy where it's actually their kid has been delivered here by rainbows and unicorns and is blessed with psychic powers, like literally psychic powers.
Yeah, they're not connecting socially because they're busy. They exist partly on this other plane of existence.
Distracting
them a little bit. That's it. Yeah.
Forget about those other planes. Why do I always forget? Why do skeptics always forget about those?
And the sad thing is that those parents who believe their kids are indigo children are not going to be giving their kids the best medical care they can get.
They don't need it.
You know, because they think everything's perfect. Oh, don't change my child.
But anyone who thinks they should be listening to Jenny McCarthy's medical and public health advice needs to read her previous articles on indigo children. And if you don't vomit, then maybe you can listen to her for a few seconds.
Can we throw out an honorable mention to Oprah Winfrey at this point, who's had Jenny McCarthy on and certainly, you know,
Well, you can vote for her, Evan. I mean, I think Oprah is almost perennially on the list because she is just the mistress of New Age nonsense. I mean, she's the venue for all these things you say to get to the public.
Oprah is just hand in hand with so many of these, you know, people that, you know, are just doing the world a disservice with their anti-science. It's one thing or another. And she seems to be kind of this pivot point around in which a lot of these people get out there and, you know, certainly make themselves known to millions of people, mostly women.
Yeah, there are a few quacks that Oprah won't promote. She's done Jenny McCarthy. She's promoted The Secret. This year, she's been big on Dr. Oz, who is all about alternative medicine and homeopathy.
Pay no attention to that doctor behind the curtain.
Yeah, she's got, you know, on her website, she has all sorts of things about homeopathic treatment. She's pretty much, you know, just a receptacle for idiocy.
Right. And right behind her is Larry King.
Yeah, but at least he's Larry funny King. To watch. I mean, the guy is just, he's his own circus, you know?
You mean how his faculties are crumbling before our very eyes on national TV live every night?
Have you seen my wife?
We're on the air, Larry.
You know
so
what,
who
though?
Else? We got McCarthy.
Don't forget Ben Stein, and don't forget, don't forget the quote from Ben Stein, which I happen to have handy right here. This is him he's talking about PZ Myers here. He goes, "When we just saw that man, I think it was Mr. Myers, talking about how great scientists were, I was thinking to myself, the last time any of my relatives saw scientists telling them what to do, they were telling them to go to the showers to get gassed. That was horrifying beyond words, and that's where science, in my opinion, this is just an opinion, that's where science leads you." Thank you, Ben Stein, for coming up with one of the dumbest things I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah,
insulting on every level.
The jackass quote of the year, no question.
Absolutely.
Gosh, he is awful. Yep.
Yeah, I compared it. I compared Ben Stein's year to on my blog. I had a list of the top jackasses of the year, and I gave him the number one, just because what I said was the nearest equivalent would be your drunk shirtless cousin climbing to the second story balcony and shouting, "Hey y'all, look at me!" before he trips over the ledge and like tumbles into a pigsty full of manure. That's basically what Ben Stein did this year. You know, he went. He promoted this movie so heavily, and he put it out there as much as he could, and then he was just endlessly mocked and reviled across the nation, across the world. Like
he
people
was
just
appropriately held up to public ridicule.
Yeah,
appropriately.
And it's funny because he actually had this public persona and reputation, deserved or not, as a smart guy. And this was the year where everyone realized that he's an idiot, at least in this way, at least with regard to science. That he's not such a smart guy. He destroyed, in my opinion, destroyed his public reputation with his promotion of this movie, which I think, all things considered, was an epic fail for the intelligent design crowd, the creationists, you know, the Discovery Institute, and for Ben Stein personally.
Yeah.
He is considered, I think, in most circles, intelligent because, you know, yes, he's in entertainment, but also he's in politics, mm-hmm. and he's in economics,
yeah,
you know,
right.
which you have to know something about those things to be able to hold your own as a regular. And he's been doing that for, you know, 20, 25 years.
Right. But even a smart person can lack critical thinking skills could be ideologically blinded.
Mm-hmm. Jay, the last part of that quote that you forgot to mention is that he continued later in that interview and said, "Love of God and compassion and empathy leads you to a very glorious place, and science leads you to killing people."
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I'm sorry, which one were the terrorists using on 9/11? That was right. Love of God, right?
Oh, no, they were true. They love science.
Oh, that's...
Huge fans of science.
Not true, actually. Not true at all.
Well, Ben Stein has to stand also in place for all of the intelligent design and creationist losers of 2008.
Oh, definitely. He represents them.
Yeah. And the Discovery Institute and my personal favorite.
Michael Egnor.
Yeah. He and I have been going at it all year. He's been hammering me a lot recently. I'm due for a counterpunch.
Don't break
another
my butt.
Euphemism?
Hammering you?
Oh, yeah. He had some free time or something. He's been writing all these blogs the last few weeks, making a total jackass of himself.
Like
I cannot think
wall.
His way out of a brown paper bag. I think what happened is that Michael Egnor got a book on logical fallacies and never realized that these were arguments you were not supposed to make. He thinks that this is how you're supposed to argue and what you're supposed to base your arguments on.
Oh, God. He's going to digress to the point where he's going to write a book and it's going to have two words in it. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And that'll be his best argument to date.
It'll be the most cogent thing he's ever said.
Do you think he listens to the show?
No, I don't think so. No. He definitely reads my blog, though, because he responds to it.
Superficially. And
God, you know what I love? Quickly. I love to think of him like in his office in his house, and he's reading your blog, and he's like, "I hate that guy."
Novella.
Novella.
More nemesis. You know?
Novella. Oh, man.
That's awesome. Steve, if I could inspire someone to whip up a amount of hatred that he has for you, I would just feel blessed.
Oh, it's a badge of honor. I mean, if you get mentioned on the Disco Toots propaganda blog, that's like skeptical props, in my opinion. That's
you're on their radar as
a skeptic who needs to be addressed specifically. That's, you know.
You know, those rogues are one thing, but that's Stephen Novella. Rebecca, tons of people hate you.
Everybody hates me, let's be honest.
So lucky.
I know. What can I say? I'm blessed.
Yeah, you're doubly blessed.
Doubly blessed.
I think I get the most hate mail.
I got a douchebag I want to throw on a list.
All right.
Jenny McCarthy and Ben, they were the top of my list. I mean, Jenny's got a body count. I mean, enough said. But I want to throw somebody
She's
a little bit offbeat on there.
Too.
One of mine is George Bush. I felt the need to kind of
mention him. He's got a higher body count than Jenny.
Well, I'm just thinking in terms of just his relationship with science. I thought it just, you know, warranted a special mention considering he was leaving. And
it was an oil and water kind of relationship.
I felt he should be mentioned since he had probably the worst relationship with science and scientists in decades. He demoted the assistant to president for science to science advisors, not even cabinet level. I got a good quote from Bill Blandpete, a retired analyst at National Science Foundation. He said, "What Bush has done that no president has done before is to actually distort science. That, to me, is among the greatest crimes this administration has done."
You're absolutely right, Bob. You're absolutely right. He deserves to be harshly criticized for trumping science with ideology at the presidential and federal level. However, I think that he created perhaps more of a backlash. He taught us the value of unbiased science advising to the political process. And maybe that's a lesson we're going to have to relearn and relearn every now and then. But I think a generation now appreciates why we need to have untainted science advising the political process more than any time previously, don't you think?
I agree. I'm glad you can find some good that came out of it. So that's a plus, I guess.
Well, let's go over some stats from 2008, and then we'll go back and talk about some more year in review. At the end of 2007, we were just shy of 30,000 weekly listeners, And we, you know, came up with a slightly ambitious but not outrageous goal of increasing our weekly audience to 50,000 by the end of 2008. And as of today, our weekly audience sits around 45,000. So that's pretty respectable. We definitely increased by about 16,000-17,000 listeners. We became pretty close to our goal. We didn't reach our completely arbitrary goal of 50,000. I also think that, honestly, for the first time since we've been really keeping track of our stats, the rate at which our numbers was increasing decreased. So our audience is still increasing, but the rate of that increase has leveled off a little bit. So, which I think means that we're starting to saturate the podcasting universe, the skeptical podcasting universe, that there aren't a lot of listeners out there that we can easily get just by them knowing we exist.
Well, we knew it wasn't an endless, ceiling.
We knew we were going to hit the ceiling sometime. We just had no idea when. We were obviously, ecstatic, surprised that it's as high as it is. Though, of course, once we get here, we want to keep going. We want to keep pushing it.
That's right. There's more competition certainly other folks doing similar things to what we're doing. So there is that factor. And still, there are people who are still learning about what podcasting is and just getting into it and getting up to speed with that technology. So,
our numbers are going to continue to grow just because the podcasting universe is growing. And we usually get the post-Christmas bump,
Yeah.
Million
Everybody
people
gets
get their iPods.
iPods. Yeah. Yeah. Right. What can I play on this iPod? And they find us because we're listed on iTunes.
Those
iTunes continues
bastards.
To be 75% of our traffic. 75%. So guess how many total downloads ever we have?
8 zillion.
6,999,999.
Just today, we eked over 7 million total downloads.
Oh, wow. Today?
7,010,000
awesome. I was close.
Downloads. We get about 350,000 downloads a month now.
Wow. That's a lot.
Wow. Over
that,
7 million
all
served.
Episodes, yeah.
That's nice.
That's
that
really
amazing.
Cool.
A third of a million every month.
Our most downloaded episode, for whatever reason, I still haven't figured out yet, was the episode that we recorded on February 6th of this year, and that one has 61,502 downloads.
So what was the topic of that one?
Yeah, was there a guest on that one?
That was the episode where we interviewed Richard Hayes. Again, I don't know if that created a link somewhere back to us.
I think maybe people thought it was Isaac Hayes, and they realized it was Richard Hayes. No.
Yeah, he was the guy from the Union of Concerned Scientists. Mm. So it was political, but maybe that's what it was.
Maybe.
You could say we have 50 million listeners. It wouldn't make a difference to me, because I swear I'm just sitting in my computer room.
Yeah, it's all out there in the ether, huh?
I'm in bed.
Rebecca, the laziest podcaster on the planet.
I really am.
Rebecca does her best work in bed.
That's what they say.
The SGU 5x5 gets about 15,000 weekly audience, which is respectable.
We had zero. We just started 5x5
this year. That was new
this year.
That was new this year. We completed
so 15,000. Yeah. So.
And don't forget the best 5x5 stat we got.
That's right. We were listed as iTunes. We were voted by iTunes as one of their top 25 audio podcasts of all in the world, basically.
Of 2008.
Of 2008, correct.
iTunes also listed a new and upcoming skeptical podcast, the Skeptic Podcast. And you guys got a huge bump out of that. I'm sure you saw that, Rebecca.
Yeah,
we were featured
did.
On iTunes as, up and coming.
Nice. So, the SGU is pretty much, the SGU team as a whole is pretty much ruling iTunes.
Yeah, we have three podcasts commonly in the top 25. The SGU, we hover around number 10. And as our numbers have gone up, our ranking has remained pretty consistent, which is why I think that we're just growing along with the podcasting universe. Of course, we're always thinking of what can we do to break through that glass ceiling, if you will, how to get a much bigger audience for skepticism. We still haven't figured it out.
More podcasts from bed.
Podcasting from bed. You think that's the secret? Our YouTube videos are getting about 10,000 views. That's pretty good.
Not bad.
Not bad. Not 10 million.
Yeah, right. Not like the evolution of dance, which got 107 million, but we're getting there.
Well, that's all right, because Steve and I are going to do a YouTube video that's going to get huge hits. I just know it.
What, are you going to throw a cat in a bowl of spaghetti or something?
No, it's going to be Hip-Hop-Eponymous versus the Rhyme-Noceros.
Oh, yes.
I'm going to be Hip-Hop-Eponymous, and she's going to be the Rhyme-Noceros, and we're going to kick it.
Rebecca, why don't you give us a little sample of that right now?
They call me the hip-hop. I can't do it now.
Do it.
I was doing it earlier.
Do it.
They call me the Hip-Hop-Eponymous. My lyrics are bottomless.
So are your clothes.
Apparently they're not bottomless.
That's the joke, Bob. Good job, Bob.
All right, Bob.
Do you guys want to hear some science or fiction stats for 2008?
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
These were compiled by Mike LaSalle, so thanks for that, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
Hey, Mike.
So, Rebecca, these are now games played, number won, number lost, and the percentage for 2008. So,
I thought you were saying I was number one.
Rebecca played in 48 science or fictions, 135, lost 13, with the percentage of 72.9. Bob played in 49, 133, lost 16, percentage of 67.3. Jay played in 44, 127, lost 17 with a percentage of 61.4. And Evan played in 51, that's the most, 130, lost 21 with a percentage of 58.8.
I win.
All pretty good.
We're all way above the average.
Yeah. All better than random guessing.
I win.
Rebecca also had
the gap.
Rebecca had the longest winning streak of 12 in 2008 from episodes 130 to 142.
That's because I was wearing my lucky pajamas.
That's why.
I thought you said you were bottomless.
My lyrics are bottomless. My actual bottoms
totally
are lavender leopard print.
I'm not as excited.
The longest
now.
Losing streak was Evan, 4 episodes in a row from 168 to 171.
Wow, that's
was drunk for Evan. I was drunk for a month. What do you want?
The lost month. And I do have to say, for completeness and full disclosure, that I did 2 science or fictions in 2008 and got 2 wrong. And for the 0%.
Batting 1,000.
My percentage for correct for science fiction remains 0.0.
That is remarkably bad, Steve.
It is. And, and Mike
small sample.
Labeled that stat, "Suck it, Steve." Wonder where he got that from.
Yeah.
It's funny because it's true.
One of his favorite quotes.
You know, Mike couldn't be here tonight.
No. We love Mike.
Because of the bus strike.
Did you know he's Canadian?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, he's got to get off that bus sometime. I mean, really. This is too long now.
Mike thought the douchebag of the year was Jenny McCarthy and Jim Carrey. And he also mentioned the ATU Local 279 bus system, I guess, for being the reason he can't make it tonight. His favorite news item. Yeah, 2, the artificial heart, and he also liked the, they came up with the one, that artificial living cell that can officially generate electricity.
The electrocyte.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, let's go back and do some more of the year in review, and we'll start with Mike's item. So, best science news item.
It depends how you define best. For me,
well,
it was
most surprising.
Raddest.
The most impactful, just the coolest, whatever you want.
For me, it was the Large Hadron Collider. Although they had problems at the end, the fact that they actually just the fact that it was built, the money was spent, and scientists and nations were motivated to build something of that scale with such potential for theories and discoveries, it was just thrilling to watch that. And I'm hoping in the future they make some incredible discoveries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the fact that they had to shut it down and didn't get to run it this season is actually just a hiccup. If we're a machine like that. So, I mean, right. It has yet to actually do some experiments, but yeah, I agree that it deserves props just for finishing it.
And the other cool angle to this whole thing, for me, was a whole fun pseudoscience angle to it.
Yeah.
Because you had extremists all over saying that the world was going to end because of black holes and strangelets, and it was really interesting because it made you delve into why, you know, why are they wrong? And you got to think about cosmic rays and black holes and things, and it was interesting just just to research that and try to find out why specifically are these people wrong.
Well, there was a whole group called the Citizens Against the Large Hadron Collider,
And they just sent me a friggin' MySpace friend request. I'm like, are you serious?
Oh, yeah.
Sorry. That's awesome. Literally what I responded with. Are you serious? WTF.
Their leader, Walter Wagner, here's his quote of the year, and someone put this up as one of the worst science predictions of 2008. There's a real possibility of creating destructive theoretical anomalies such as miniature black holes, strangelets, and De Sitter space transitions. These events have the potential to fundamentally alter matter and destroy our planet.
You know what that sentence means, Evan?
Fail.
I'm a scared.
Yeah, Chicken Little. They called him the
very, very afraid.
He's the 21st century's version of Chicken Little. Mm-hmm. Is what
I say. We eliminate whales just in case one materializes in the air and falls on us.
Do you know how much they poop?
Jay, do you have a best, favorite, coolest science news story for 2008?
I have a favorite story that we discussed on the show.
Okay.
Yeah.
My favorite story of the year was that guy who had his magic leg stolen.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I tried to find more information on it, and alas, there was not a follow-up. I was crushed.
But I just, it was really humorous.
I just loved that.
Darkly
that bit,
terrible
that, that whole thing, man.
The magic leg ran away?
Yeah, they stole his leg, and...
Jay likes dark humor.
Melee well, first he claimed that his leg was magic, and wasn't it that it would give men...
It would grant wishes.
That's right. Yeah.
And so I wish I had my leg back.
So some guys sawed it off and ran away.
Oh, my gosh.
And the guy survived.
Really, yeah.
So I had the artificial heart on my short list as well, but I'm going to mention collectively all of the solar energy breakthroughs of that occurred during 2008 as my favorite science news items, because there were so many of them, you know, improving efficiency a number of ways with the remember the popcorn structure, you know, using multiple methods for deriving energy from the photons, fuller wavelengths, etc. You know, figuring out ways that you can capture light by having it travel through a pane of glass, and then you can get captured along the edge with a solar cell there. Just seems there's so many independent lines of research are hitting pay dirt that, and I do think that has a tremendous amount of potential, you know, to really revolutionize our energy, you know, sources in the future. Also, breakthroughs in battery technology to go along with that, using light to split hydrogen from oxygen as a way of
that was a big one. That was a big one for me. Probably the biggest solar advance.
Wow.
Just incredible. So just that gets my vote collectively, all the solar breakthroughs this year.
Well, I'm going to go on a tangent off that, Steve. Part of that is also the success of the Phoenix lander mission that happened this year. I mean, there were some great discoveries made on Mars this year. They dug up the water ice. They spotted falling snow. And, you know, just the mission was a real great success. We had Diane Blaney on a couple times this year, to give us updates, and the mission went much longer than they had scheduled and anticipated that it would, and they're still sifting through the data, and they just came up with some really, really terrific new information about Mars.
Right.
And that was very exciting.
For technological achievements, Bob, I'd have to give the Mars lander, the Phoenix lander, the edge over the LHC, the Large Hadron Collider, because it just was such a stunning success. It exceeded
both our expectations. Both of those things really did a great job of getting the public excited.
Yeah, I agree. Getting the public excited about science and discovery.
Yeah. Well, for my vote for best news item, I would have to go with a recent one, the search for the ivory-billed woodpecker.
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. That was really boring. My favorite
Birds.
My favorite news item was the research into how the key to optical illusions may be our brain's ability to perceive the future. I think that's just a really cool idea that our brain is sensing things and making predictions all unbeknownst to us. And
right.
That may be why we can catch a fly ball, or and also why we why we see, say, stationary lines spinning, things like that.
So, yeah,
that was a cool theory.
honorable mention. So in July, an international team of craftsmen unveiled an unusual pair of balls believed to be the roundest objects in the world. These silicon balls are designed to each contain near identical number of silicon atoms and become a new way to define the kilogram.
I have the science news story that I was surprised that we missed.
Oh, good one, Steve.
That we did not talk about. In February of this year, the long-raging scientific controversy over the legitimacy of the G-spot may have been resolved. And we missed talking
really?
About this. This
is I resolved that years ago.
Published in the Journal of Sexual Medicine. And what they found was that women who report that they have vaginal orgasms actually have a thickening in the anterior wall of the vagina where they claim their G-spot is. And that women who do not report that they are not able to have vaginal orgasms do not have that thickening. So they're saying, well, there you go. There's anatomical evidence that thickening is the G-spot. And that's that some women have it and some women do not have it. You know, even though this may resolve the issue, at least to some degree, it's not without its, you know, deeper scientific controversies. These things always have their minority opinions, or at least there's some way to, other way to interpret that. And what some critics have said is that actually that maybe that thickening of the skin might just be the clitoris, might just be part of the clitoris that is in, you know, larger in this way in some women. That's why. So it's actually not a vaginal orgasm then. It's actually just another way of stimulating the clitoris.
But wouldn't that still technically be, in a way, a vaginal orgasm?
I guess orgasm you're splitting hairs then.
It's in there. But, you know?
And you said deep.
Splitting hairs.
But, yeah, you know, it's just that anatomically, what is it? Is it really a completely separate anatomical entity, a G-spot? Or it makes a lot of sense if it's just an extension of the clitoris that in some women, but it's too small in other women to be stimulated that way. So very interesting, and because we actually talked about this issue a couple of years ago on the show, which is why
it was right before I came. Oh,
it was. It was
right before.
So to speak.
That's right.
Oh.
Let's move on to
quickly
our favorite SGU moment. SGU moment. Actually, for this one, I'd like to start on the message board. We have been, you know, we did ask our listeners to tell us what their, to give their answers to all of the year in review questions, and we did read through all of it, and we are talking about a lot of that so far. Henning, actually, I think, did the most thorough job of listening back over a bunch of episodes, and he pulled out some of his favorite moments. I'm just going to read through them really quick. He mentioned the penis theft panic that we had a lot of fun with. Remember that?
Oh,
one?
Yeah.
The penis mitia.
The SGU drinking game rules.
Oh, yeah. We never really abide by those, do we?
You like Bob's inebriated haunting tour?
Oh, yeah. Bob got wasted. Bob gets wasted at a Halloween convention. And then, Bob, you got recognized at that convention.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
But you missed the contest, right?
No, I didn't miss it. I lost.
Oh.
The rules were ambiguous.
He said that
that's all I'll say.
He liked when we were talking about Pluto's consolation prize. Rebecca joked, "Yeah, it's like calling all presidential losers goroids,"
which I think might catch on. If
yes,
we
you think so?
Start doing that.
Mm-hmm. I have to say right out. I think it's very recent. You're always biased by the more recent stuff, but I thought one of our funniest bits, if not the funniest bit of the year, was the whole bird sound segment that
I
we
knew
did.
You were going to say that
was good.
You
that
thought
was
that
good.
Was our funniest bit of the year?
It was hilarious. I listened back to it with somebody else recently.
That's because of his love of birds.
As I said, I might be biased.
Oh. You are. I think the funniest is the one that never made it to air when Jay's cat puked on his keyboard Bob was in the middle of talking about nanotechnology.
That was the funniest to you, that of that horrific event
in
my life?
Oh, my God. I'd like to recreate it for our listeners because they couldn't hear it. Only I'll use no curse words. Bob, start talking about something, preferably nanotechnology.
Blah blah nanotech, blah blah nanotechnology.
Oh, holy crap! Oh, holy crap! What the f? Holy crap!
Bleepity bleep bleep bleep.
Holy,
what the bleepity
what the,
bleep?
What the f? You stupid piece of f! And oh crap!
Yeah, I was
God.
Was it that bad?
Yeah.
You know what happens?
Bob didn't know nanotechnology.
I overfed my cat. I gave him a can of a can of wet tuna, and he ate the dry tuna, and he just literally vomited a cupful of cat food up on my keyboard. It was really nasty. Oof.
Yeah, you got to understand, though, that's the equivalent of a cat going out and, you know, killing a bird and dropping it at your doorstep, right?
It says he loves you, and he loves the podcast.
I know, but it was right on the keyboard. Like, almost anywhere else would have been better.
Almost.
I threw the keyboard out.
Oh. Well, I was going to say, look, this is a little different take on this particular category, but my favorite moments of this past year were all the live performances that we got.
Yeah,
we had the honor of partaking in, and TAM 6, Dragon Con, and the Perry DeAngelis Memorial event in October. So getting up on a stage and doing a live show for a live audience is a rare treat, and it really is a treat. It's something very special. It's different than what we do here every week. Live just has, I don't know, it's just a much more...
It's a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's a different feeling.
Especially being together. All of us being together is great. We're always alone.
That's definitely part of it. Yeah. That certainly is part of it. But an audience with right there.
Getting to have the guest right there too, I think is a lot more fun. Having Ben Radford hop up and down on the bed trying to get a picture of him levitating. Those were just such a good time doing those interviews at TAM and stuff.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite sound bits of the year was definitely God, it's so funny I can't even say it. We'll tiptoe to the rooftops of London. Coal blimey.
You love that thing.
Oh God,
that was great.
That was Richard Wiseman. Yeah, he's hilarious.
That was Christmas for me.
I never actually played that.
The live interviews, I agree. There's so much more energy and back and forth, and it really makes for, I think, a much better interview.
And the guests.
Absolutely.
Oh, what guests.
One of the other categories is the favorite guest of the year, but before we all say who was our favorite, let me run down the list. I'm just going to name everyone we interviewed in the order we interviewed them this year, starting with John Rennie, then Brian Dunning, Fraser Cain and Pamela Gay from Astronomy Cast, Richard Hayes, PZ Myers, Robert Fitzpatrick, Ola Fink, Stephen Barrett, Eugenie Scott, Yao Man Chan, Eric Avery, Simon Singh, Kirsten Sanford, Martin Rundquist, Carl Zimmer, Diana Blaney, Walter Isaacson, John Blumenfeld, Dina Dell, James Randi, Neil deGrasse Tyson, George Crabb, Phil Plait with James Randi again, Captain Disillusion, Adam Savage, Richard Saunders, Ben Radford, Ben Goldacre, Sharon Begley, Matthew Chapman, PZ Myers, Phil Plait, Diana Blaney, Graydon Square, Paul Offit, Stephen Shaversman, and Richard Wiseman. Quite
a
lineup.
Wow.
That's looking back on that.
They were all wonderful. I think we were incredibly lucky to have many great guests. But are there any standouts for any of you guys?
Jeez, I hate to pick.
I hate to pick, too.
George was one of my favorite.
George Rabb.
He was so great.
I mean...
Yeah, he was awesome.
You know, just meeting him for the first time, and then I just loved that conversation we had with him. I felt like the conversation we were having was a continuation of, 20 hours of dialogue. I just was very comfortable, and he's a really, really, really good, smart, fun guy to hang out with.
I would say the most surprising interview for me was Matthew Chapman.
I was going to say the exact same thing.
Yeah, the great-grandson of Charles Darwin.
I did not expect him to be that entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, he was a great interview. The content was awesome. And he's the kind of guy, we interviewed him because we were together with him at TAM 6. And honestly, I don't think I ever would have thought to put that guy in the lineup to interview him if we didn't have access to him at TAM. And it turned out to be an awesome interview. Very, very surprising. He was, again, very likable, very funny guy. It was a great chat.
And I think he was kind of into me.
You think so? But you think that about everybody.
Rebecca,
it's
true, God. You were just saying that about me before the show. Come on.
He did have a glass of something in his hand. I don't know what it was.
No, I did really enjoy chatting with him. I thought he was one of my favorite new people who I didn't know before we interviewed him.
Right.
He was probably I think the best of that bunch for me.
Well, Tyson was just interviewing him was just funny. His charisma is off the hook, but I just felt like we were cracking up a lot in and around the interview with him.
He got, I think, the most votes from our listeners on the boards. Neil deGrasse Tyson.
He is awesome in person.
He is. He's a very, as you say, very charismatic, very comfortable speaking, you know, obviously in public and also in interviews. So quite a treasure in terms of promoting science to the public.
And one of my favorite interview moments of the year was definitely when we were interviewing Phil Plait and Adam Savage came by and jumped down and jumped in the interview on
jumped
that.
On.
Was,
that was
really
great.
Cool.
Since you mentioned that, Jay, because actually they didn't make it into the SGU this year, that bit, we used just a very small portion of Phil's interview from that session. However, that entire interview with Phil Plait, over an hour, with the two interruptions by Adam Savage, is now available as an SGU uncut episode.
Yeah. That'd be a good one, because that was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. That's also the kind of thing that doesn't happen when when you're recording over the Skype. You know,
It's like, Adam Savage is trying to Skype in.
Not exactly the same thing, right? Him pulling up a chair and, you know, throwing on the headphones and jumping in the conversation. And it was so spontaneous and really one of our more wonderful moments of the year.
It was. It was awesome. And since we're talking about it, so the SGU Uncut, this is now the fourth episode. So you have four episodes. This is bonus content, all over an hour, completely uncut episodes. We have two from last year with a number of uncut interviews from TAM 5, including one with Christopher Hitchens, which is just off the hook funny. I love that interview.
Oh, yeah.
That was, I think, my favorite interview from 2007 was the Christopher Hitchens.
Oh, yeah,
interview.
By far.
That was
wicked.
Was fun.
This year we have an uncut interview with Banachek, and now also with Phil Plait with Adam Savage breaking in.
Banachek's went on for hours, and it was fantastic.
It was awesome.
Every
second
of it.
The Alpha Project, I mean, that is it. That was a textbook. That was a course study right there in the whole Alpha Project. That was wonderful.
Oh, it was great. Yeah, it went over the whole thing. So these are, again, we have a promise. We will never charge for the Skeptic's Guide to the Universe podcast. This is the free content that we produce. This is sort of the flagship of all the skeptical activities that we're doing now. But we do have this extra content that we see it as really a way for our listeners to make a small donation to the Skeptic's Guide to support everything that we do. And as a thank you for making a small donation, you get this bonus extra content as a sort of our thank you gift. So we would do greatly appreciate it. You go to the Skeptic's Guide website and click on the premium content button. And there are now four episodes up there. And you could buy them directly off of that site, and it gives a little bit of support for the SGU that we greatly appreciate. And while we're talking about that, I will take this time to remind our listeners that we are a nonprofit organization. We do all of this in our spare time. We are run entirely off of the generous donations of our members, as well as a little bit of merchandising and a little bit of advertising on the website. The podcast itself is free of advertising, so we do actually follow more of the sort of public television model where we give the content for free, but then we ask people to support us in other ways. All of the money that we get from our listeners and our members goes into producing the podcast, producing our websites, our blogs. You know, we now have two podcasts in addition to the SGU. There's the 5x5, which is a 5 to 10 minute clean, suitable for the classroom, one single topic skeptical podcast. And we have four blogs, actually, that we're contributing to. Actually, five if you include Skeptic. There's actually five blogs. Among Us, actually, we have three podcasts and five blogs. Now with Skeptic, and then the blogs are the Skeptic blog, the Rogues Gallery, which we all contribute to, my personal blog, Neurologica, Science-Based Medicine, and now the Skeptic blog, which is myself plus the other potential cast members of the Skeptologists on that one.
Oh, and I also have BostonSkeptics.com.
And Boston
Skeptics. Let's make it six.
And crap-based medicine.
Yeah, and crap-based medicine.
Oh, I have nothing to do with crap-based medicine. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh.
Deny all association with it. And as well now, YouTube videos.
I believe that's run by Dr. Sexy MD. So you can take that up with him or her.
And our live shows. So the more resources we get, the more live shows we'll do, the more content we'll be able to generate, the more cool stuff we'll be able to do. So we appreciate all of it.
I hate to say this, but if every listener donated a dollar, We would have plenty of money to do what we need to do for the year, and we would be out the door a lot more. We would be able to do more gigs.
Right. If every listener just bought one uncut episode, that's really all it would take.
That's all we ask.
If every listener sent me a kitten,
I'd have
far too many kittens. Please don't do that.
But speaking of email, we love to get feedback from our listeners, and we get a lot of it. We love it, all of it, and we do read every piece of email that we get. And we have picked some of our favorites, our best and worst email from the year.
I've got the worst. Well, we start with the worst.
Well, I have one. I have a good one, and it literally came today.
Oh.
And this is a compliment.
What are the chances that the best one than never, will come in on the 30th?
This is a compliment to Steve, I'll read it. I know you guys get tons of fan mail, but I was reading Dr. Novella's blog posting recently, and the thought struck me. Steve, you have the same patient, informative, and passionate tone Carl Sagan mastered. That tone is precisely what skepticism needs from front to end. It promotes a positive view of who we are and what we do.
Oh, that's really nice.
That's high praise. From Ryan. That's from Ryan Cunningham, right?
Thanks, Ryan.
Oh, yeah. Wasn't my mother?
No. Yeah. Your mom, no. Your loving mother.
That was really nice.
That was very nice.
I have a really mushy one. It's kind of a downer. It's a really great email, though, and we got it back in August, and I don't think it made it to air. It's from William in Las Vegas, and he writes, "Dear Rogues, I once knew a wonderful man and had the good fortune to call him friend for the short time he was with us. While I was graced with his presence, he introduced me to the Skeptic's Guide. It's been over a year since my friend was taken away, and all I have left are the memories of him and you. The pain we all experienced when Perry left us has mirrored my own more personal struggle to cope with the loss of my friend. Mr. DeAngelis's death affected the show in a way that seemed, week by week, to follow my emotions after my friend's death to the last detail. What I saw in our grief over Perry helped to drive home the fragility of these relationships we take for granted. The beauty of our condition helped me recognize the majesty beneath the pain of tragedy. It helped me see the beauty in my friend's death. That he could live such a full life and die, though unexpectedly, fully content that he had accomplished more than any one man deserves. His death didn't mark the day his accomplishments ended, but rather the day he could truly list everything he did before he died. Perhaps it is just a feature of the human condition that so many opportunities must fall by the wayside. I have loved so many who will never know, but you must. I have neither met nor spoken to any of you, but I mark each of you my friend. I extend to all of you the love a friend deserves. Thank you for seeing me through both tragedies and for teaching me that death is not something to fear. You mean the world to us all."
Wow.
Wow. Wow.
That was great.
Isn't that a really sweet letter?
It was.
And
it is. Very thoughtful.
I had set it aside, and we never got a chance to fit it into a show because it just didn't really fit. But it was really well written.
That's
so
perfect for this show, I think.
Yeah.
That is fantastic. You know, we read a lot of these emails, and to this day, I still send out emails to everyone else, you know, to everyone on the show, where I'm like, what? Where? You know, like, wow, how can we have that effect on people?
Yeah.
But in any way, if we're helping anyone out there, if we're making a difference in any way, it does mean the world to us. I mean, it's very important for us to know that we're not just sitting here talking to each other, that... Mm-hmm. This might sound kind of hokey, but this is really the only thing of me that's ever going to be remembered.
Well, you'll be remembered for this and also that room full of jars of your own urine.
Right.
And the fingernails.
Yeah, but I've been slowly drinking that, so that my collection is way down.
Oh.
There's a few themes that I like to see in emails a lot. Here's one from Rachel Wells. I'm just going to read part of what you said. I also want to tell you how much your podcast means to me. I know you hear it all the time, but I seriously feel like I'm in a conversation with you all. Sometimes when I'm on public transport, I laugh out loud when some silly joke is made. So that's one of the themes that we hear a lot, that's exactly what we're going for, that this is very personable, it's a conversation.
If you feel that it's a conversation, you should remember, do not speak back, especially when in public.
When you're in public, like on the train.
I'd hate to feel responsible for your imprisonment.
Then there's also those emails that it still surprises me when people say, tell us that we actually pulled them back from the brink of pseudoscience.
It's mega cool. Yeah.
It's like the, you know, it's the holy grail, of course, of this kind of skeptical activism. But we tell ourselves that we can't really do that. I mean, what we're doing is teaching skeptics how to be better skeptics. We love those emails too. I like, you know, when teachers write us and say, we taught them how to think more logically or more clearly, that their arguments are much better. That's exactly what we're going for. It's exactly what we're trying to teach people, how to just think more clearly, to appreciate science better, logic better. But then we get those that are saying that I was a true believer and you guys showed me the light of day. It's like, wow, that just blows me away when we get those emails.
Well, and that's what's keeping us in the game.
Absolutely.
Definitely. Yeah, we're waiting for that email to come from Oprah.
Right.
Sylvia Brown.
Yeah. Right.
You showed me the light, Skeptic's Guide.
I'm changing.
You're all getting cars.
Changing my format.
Look under your chairs. There's keys.
Guys, I don't have one email, but I've got snippets that I've been culling for the past few months. So I've got,
knitting
I've got
them
my
together
five best.
Into one email.
Yeah, so it's like one big email.
Go ahead, Bob.
So I got my top five. These are all from emails. There might be one or two from the boards. I actually don't remember, but most of these are emails, and they just struck me as funny. Number five. Hi guys, can you all put your throbbing chess club brains together and help me with a problem? I like that one. Number four. A few months ago, I realized that I should start thinking more logically and started to consider that maybe, just maybe, the stuff that I'm learning on Sunday is total shit.
God.
Number three, this is a goodie. Does Rebecca like fat, hairy, yet bald married guys?
Yes. Okay. Oh my God.
I was hoping you'd answer that.
Who doesn't?
Number two, this one was good. We can exploit the momentum of the powerfully stupid and use our skeptical kung fu to bitch slap them with science.
That's good.
I thought that was good. And number one, my favorite little snippet. Help me, SGU. You're my only hope. I love that one.
That's a nice little nugget.
Well, and here's another sort of facet of folks that write into us and tell us what we're doing and makes a difference and so forth. It's from the teachers out there and the professors who are actually, you know, using our show to some extent in their class. So this one's from Sean Rafferty. He wrote us back in January and said, I can think of a half dozen times or so when a student has told me that I made a difference in their lives, and nothing in my career so far has given me more personal and professional fulfillment. So he was listening to our 2007 wrap-up and wanted to take a moment to say thank you, that we made a difference in his life, the way he looks at the world, and the way he teaches his students. He recommends our podcast in every class, and he's even seen students cite it, which means that they're actually listening to
Whoa.
It.
Whoa.
Oh, God.
So, and this is Sean Rafferty from the Department of Anthropology, University of Albany.
And strangely, many of these teachers and professors write in about Evan's nipples.
Yeah, for some reason. We haven't figured that one out yet.
I have a quick email I'd like to read. This one is from Andrew Cheeseman from London. And he said, Hi, Steve, Rebecca, Jay, Bob, and Evan. Just wanted you guys to know some of us in England really enjoy and appreciate the great job you're doing. I started by listening to episode 1 back in February this year and got to 171 this week. In that time...
Wait a minute.
I know, that's funny, right?
Is that physically possible?
In that time, I got to know and love Perry, listen to Rebecca join. Is Rebecca naked in the picture on the website? I'm pretty sure... I'm pretty sure Jay is my long-lost brother. I'm also a developer, ex-Microsoft, and an SF geek, and like him in many, many other ways, and gained so much respect for Steve's massive brain, Bob's love of everything large... And in quotes, he put the word space, and everything small, nanotech, and Evan's smart wit. Thank you for putting a voice and title to the way I think. No longer do I feel the outsider and the oddity when I'm in a group of people and argue against the pseudoscience or interject when you hear a logical fallacy.
That's another theme, too, the community of skeptics. Like, I didn't realize there was actually other skeptics or other people like me out there, or that there was a name for what I was.
Yes.
We get that a lot as well. Well, there's just so much more that we wanted to talk about on our wrap-up episode. We're running out of time, so we're going to switch gears now and thank all those people who helped us over the last year. And for a part of this, we're going to be joined by Jeremy, who's been helping on the website. Joining us now is Jeremy Diller. Jeremy, thanks for joining us for our wrap-up episode.
Thank you for having me.
I'd like to introduce Jeremy real quick. Jeremy has been the main driving force behind the website. He's helped me orchestrate every move that we've made. And over the past year, Jeremy, right, we've been working together. The bulk of the work has been done over the past 4 months. And Jeremy has done most of the work himself, but we did have a few other people help that we'd like to mention. But I would just like to personally thank Jeremy as one of the most helpful people to the SGU this year. Thanks, Jeremy.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you, Jeremy. So when are we going to actually see the live website? And don't say, oh, about 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
About 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
About 14 days.
Well, I'll help him answer that.
Thank you. Okay.
We're in a really good space right now. We have some data entry left to do, and we're waiting on one component. But yeah, we're close. I mean, we could be launching it over the next 4 or 5 days.
Awesome.
The Earth days?
Earth days, right.
But if we go a week, it's a week.
3 days, maybe a week.
Are you in a union or something?
Oh, break time.
Is it break time?
Well, we've seen preliminary shots. It looks great.
It looks awesome. Oh, yeah. And definitely a big thank you. Yeah. You epitomize what we'd like in a listener who is a fan and wants to help, who volunteers their time to the cause. I mean, you definitely have, as Jay says, volunteered a great deal of your time and effort and expertise, very valuable expertise, and the whole SGU appreciates it and thanks you.
Well, I told Jay at the beginning of this that I agree with what you guys are doing, so I figure I can help in some small way at least.
Well, it hasn't been small. I mean, come on, dude. You and I, how many times have we talked to each other over the past year? Maybe a couple of hundred?
At least. Yeah.
Wow. Jay,
but it's only felt like 2 weeks, Jay.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's only really, Steve, actually, we started the website 2 weeks ago.
The rest is just pillow talk.
They've been playing Minesweeper since then. Yeah.
Yeah, well, we got into WoW, you know, that World of Warcraft, man. That's crack. But we have to mention some key players in this. One of the first people I'd like to mention is a listener named Fayek, who came up with the design and is phenomenal at web design. Like, you know, he blew us all away when he posted on the board, and I like the first design that he came up with, and that's been the backbone of the project. So, Fayek, thank you very much. I'd love to work with you more in the future. You're super talented, and if I had your skills, I would be making a lot of money.
Not wasting it on some skeptical podcast, right?
And then, Jeremy, who was your main programmer that helped you?
His name's Tim Fisher, and he worked primarily on the back-end piece, the part that you guys will use for entering the events and show notes and the podcasts, sort of the behind-the-scenes work.
Tim, thank you very much. I'd also like to thank Lucas Schrank, who did the logo animation for the YouTube videos, and he also helped us do the outro on that. That was awesome. That was like one of the coolest things that we got done earlier this year. And I'd also like to thank
Jake Wilson.
Absolutely. Jake Wilson. God, Jake and I have become really good friends. I mean, I chat with him all the time. And not only did Jake do the music and the vocal intro for us on the 5x5 podcast, but Jake and I and Steve have been working on some new music for the SGU. And as soon as Jake gets out of the huge commitments that he's in, we're going to try to wrap that up.
Jail. It's jail, actually.
Yeah.
It's another 6 house. Months. Possibly 8.
And you can also look up Jake on MySpace. He's got some awesome music on there you can download. I'd also like to thank Richard Binder, who's done a ton of graphics for us, and he's also going to be finishing up very soon the cool animation that you'll all see on the homepage, which I don't want to give away, but you'll see that. Rich, thank you very much. That's awesome. I'd also like to thank Gary and Mauro from Logic Bomb Media. They're responsible for the awesome player that's going to be on the homepage, and that player is the thing that people will be using to navigate through all the shows and you know, be able to hear snippets from that. And it's just an incredible thing that they came in at the last minute and helped us with.
And I'd like to thank anyone we forgot to thank up to this point.
I'd like to thank God and my parents.
And also Rob. Rob is a guy that helped us do some flash work, and he mysteriously completely evaporated, and Jeremy and I tried to get in touch with him. We couldn't get in touch with him, and honestly, I'm not joking. At this point, I'm actually worried about him. So, Rob, if you are alive, just pop me an email. Like, I'm not mad or anything. Just say hi, man, and thanks for the time you did put in. I mean, I know life gets hard.
All right. Thanks again, Jeremy.
All right, guys.
Thanks, man.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Well, as we come to a close, we have to give our thank yous and props. We already did Jeremy, and on the website crew and all the people who are producing content and music and images for us. But there's also other people that we need to thank. And definitely at the top of the list, as always, is Mike Lassell, who runs the SGUfans.net, who we always refer to as our number one fan, and who become our really close friends with all of us.
He blogs with us now.
He, you know, he does some editing on 5x5 for us. He's frequently appears on 5x5. You know, he's always there to fill in if one of us can't make it for a recording. So he's just a tremendous resource, and we love him. So thanks
for
help again this year, Mike.
Thanks,
hey,
man.
Mike. I wanted to also say thank you to a couple folks who helped us out on the road this year, not the least of which, Jack Chodnicki.
Hey, Jack.
Hey, Jack. Who also, you know, helped us out. He helped us out in Las Vegas at TAM, you know, manning our booth, our station, and also he went to Dragon Con with us and, you know, gave us some help there. And also for help in Dragon Con, shout out to Liza Peterson, who came in and just wanted to do whatever she could to help and came down and helped us with our arrangements down there. And she did a really nice job for us as well.
Yep, thanks, Liza. It's good meeting you down there. And, of course, we have to give a huge shout-out to James Randi of the James Randi Education Foundation. You know, Randi appears regularly on our show on Randi Speak. We also, you know, frequently interview him. He is a tireless advocate for skepticism and for rationality. We're very lucky, you know, to be affiliated with the JREF and to have him on our show. You know, we continue to look forward to working with him in the JREF and now its new president, Phil Plate. So we just appreciate everything, all the work that Randi does. I mean, he really, you know, putting on the amazing meeting every year, which has become the de facto, really, annual meeting of the skeptical movement and has been just tremendous for us. Those meetings now are just priceless.
I mean, plus, Randi is, the icon of our movement. He's a wonderful person, and he's dedicated his life to promoting logic and reason and skepticism, and I couldn't possibly thank the man enough for inspiring me and being a figurehead for us.
I also, this is a little personal, but I do want to thank my wife, Jocelyn. Some of you may have met her at the Amazing Meeting 6. She, year after year, puts up with all of my skeptical activities, which takes me away
skeptical
from everything
shenanigans.
Else. Shenanigans, she does. She gives me the time and freedom to do all this stuff, and she does it because really only because she knows I care about it, and that's enough for her.
So Jocelyn is an
Jocelyn,
unsung hero to us all.
We sing of you. Yeah, there you go. Now you can't say that anymore.
You're no longer unsung.
Now she's sung. Well, Jay, do you have a quote
for
our final episode of the year?
No, I didn't do a quote. I didn't prepare a quote. Did not want to do a quote because one of the board members, and before I forget, I'd like to thank everyone that contributes to our forum, and I love reading the forum posts. I'm on there all the time. But Henning on our message board put together a mashup of some of the funnier bits from me giving the quotes this year. I thought it came out really good, so take a listen. So I found a compendious quote. I think everyone will enjoy this one. Science is the poetry of reality.
I love that. That's a good one.
Good one.
Surely is.
Oh, this is going to be so good. Richard Dawkins, Lord Byron.
All right.
Henri Poincaré. Rene Descartes.
Mahatma Gandhi.
Now must they.
Why does it always make me laugh?
Plato.
Plato.
His last name is Plato, and his first name is Plato. Oh,
Thucydides. Pearl S. Buck. Ralph Waldo Emerson. Bertrand Russell. Robert Fulmer.
Nope, wait, sorry. That was the guy who sent it in. But he deserves a shout-out.
The quote was written by Dr. Lewis Thomas. The 14th Dalai Lama. Sherlock Holmes.
So that's it. I have no say in this, or
that's right.
That's right. The listeners have spoken,
and you're going to say the name of the person after the quote.
There you go.
Well, thank you all for joining me this week,
very nice.
Until next week, this is your Skeptic's Guide
Lord
to the Universe. Well, thanks again for joining me this week, everyone.
Thank you.
This year. Thanks for the whole year. Absolutely.
Thank you. I mean, wow, what a year.
And yeah. Until next week and next year.
Next year.
This is your Skeptic's Guide to
the
Universe.
And the week.
The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe is produced by the New England Skeptical Society in association with the James Randi Educational Foundation and Skeptchick.org. For more information on this and other episodes, please visit our website at www.theskepticsguide.org. For questions, suggestions, and other feedback, please use the Contact Us form on the website or send an email to info@theskepticsguide.org. If you enjoyed this episode, then please help us spread the word by voting for us on Dig or leaving us a review on iTunes. You can find links to these sites and others through our homepage. Theorem is produced by Kinetto and is used with permission.